Blog Talk Radio. Hi, this is Marnie Svedberg, and I welcome you to Marnie and Friends, a place where leaders share practical, helpful, and encouraging ways to get anything important done faster, better, and smarter. Right now, I encourage you to sit back, buckle up, and join us for fun, laughter, practical help, and clear thinking, the kind of discussion that focuses our attention off of the fluff and onto the most important stuff in life. Again, welcome to Marnie's Friends. Let's get going. Hi, everybody. This is Marnie, and welcome back. So excited to have you with us this afternoon. And if you're listening to the archive later, we're always happy to have you along, too. This afternoon, we're going to be talking about individuality, gateway to success, and our guest is Aline Snodgrass. She is one of our speakers over at womenspeakers.com. She's an amazing lady with a beautiful heart that God has been really stretching in the past few years. I know he's always stretching all of us, but her story will grip your heart, I'm sure, as it did mine. And she's actually written a book recently called Graffiti, Scribbles from Both Sides of the Street. It's written by herself and a homeless friend, Rick. And I just have to tell you that when I started reading it, it was just like, wow, okay. Don't usually think about these things, let alone Aline's been living them. So we're excited to have her here. She's going to help us understand the importance of being who we are, uniquely who we are in Christ, and why it's so important for us to follow him wherever he leads, even if it doesn't look like where we thought he was taking us. And with that, I want to introduce her to you. She's a storyteller with a heart for the broken. She speaks, writes, and blogs about her real-life experiences serving people in the inner city. And her name is Aline Snodgrass. Thank you for joining me, Aline.
Thank you, Marnie. It's always a pleasure to be here and share.
Well, I'm excited to have you here, and I love this topic. Of course, I'm always training everybody busy, best unique strategies for you based on my firm belief and conviction that God created each of us uniquely for purpose, for specific purposes, just like a car was made to carry people around from place to place, but an oven was made to cook things. You know what I mean? We are each uniquely designed to accomplish particular work on this earth, and I think that sometimes we lose focus of that, and we just start kind of doing life to do life, just kind of doing the same things over and over again, and that's why I love this topic so much. And you have such a unique perspective. We're going to kind of unfold this a little bit as the hour goes by. But for those of you who are just joining us, you want to get the download notes that are available either at marniesfriends.com or at Blog Talk Radio, or else if you're listening right now, or listening to the archive, rather, it's at leadershipattitudes.com. First, Aline, let's go ahead and talk about purpose. What is, how does someone go from just thinking, okay, I'm just living life, to saying, I really want to find out what God has in store for me?
Boy, that's a great question, and it's one that I get often. And actually, I've spent years teaching on this, looking into and digging into how uniquely made that we are by God, because I think so many times we don't even take the time to just look at our own selves and see how unique we are, clear from the way he knit us together in our mother's womb with that temperament, that personality that stays with us, through the rest of our lives, not to even mention the strengths that each of us have, and even, if you know Jesus, your spiritual giftedness that comes along with that. And I spent years digging in and searching for that. And as a matter of fact, I got so wrapped up in knowing my purpose at one point that I just about lived in the self-help section at the library, if anybody can relate to that. But it was just like, I couldn't get enough. And the more I dug into knowing who I was still so unfulfilled. Nothing was making sense. Nothing was kind of coming full term. And what God kind of showed me through that whole process was that, yes, we are all uniquely made, but it's through him that we're going to find that purpose. We can know everything that there is to know about us, the way we're wired, the way, our strengths are meant to be used. But if we're missing him along that journey and the purpose of knowing him to be able to serve others, we're still going to be lacking in that peace and that fulfillment and that joy that we're looking for in this life to know that our life has meaning.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that we sometimes I don't know, the place that we always have to get back to is how God created us. And I love the self-help section, and I've written many how-to books myself, and it's so important, and it's kind of hard to remember to go back to Jesus all the time. How did you make me? What do you want me to do? That
right.
I always have to stem from that we do have a maker. We have a creator, and we aren't an accident. All of our strengths and weaknesses, the exact, I always say, when God strung together our 3 billion base pair of DNA, he did it in a particular way. I mean, he wasn't just haphazard about how he strung you together or me. He was very specific about it, very intentional about it, and he knows what we're here for.
And every time I teach, I've written some curriculum, Savor, S-A-V-O-U-R, it's about savoring life, discovering your purpose and your passion. And every time I teach that class, the first thing I always tell the girls or whoever's in the class is that I know you showed up because you think I'm going to be able to reveal your purpose to you, because I've been there. You know, I've done the searching. I've gone to, you know, the self-help. I've gone to every seminar. I've gone to every class and read every book that I can about, you know, what is my purpose in life here? And always tell them, if you came because you think I'm going to be able to give you an answer as we walk through this, you know, this journey together, this class together, you're still going to miss it. Because I think what happens is in this, you know, this society and this world that we live in where, you know, what they tell us purpose is be successful, have more, you know, all those grand purposes. And that's not the way God works at all. You know, so while we're out trying to figure out, you know, how we can be better at our work, how we can be better at our craft, how we can, you know, become the boss, how we can have a, you know, a greater title or more authority, you know, and we miss going to God for that purpose, you know, which is basically in his word. For me, that's what happened. After I lived in the self-help section forever, and God just kind of convicted my heart of, you're not going to find it here. You know, I created you for a purpose, so you need to come to me. You know, I needed to be in his word, like asking him daily, you know, what do you have, you know, that you need me to do today for you? You know, how can I be your hands and feet for you today? And that was a big journey for me, because at that point in time, I wasn't, like, going to his word and studying and just being with him and having a relationship. That was a foreign thing for me. And so there was a huge learning curve along that journey. But when I finally got there, you know, it's so true. That purpose, that peace that we're all longing for is, I mean, it's all spelled out right there in his, you know, in his love letter, the Bible, you know, he wrote for each and every one of us.
You've recently released this book called Graffiti, and in it you talk about how you knew that God was leading you to serve the broken and abused, but you just didn't have any idea where to turn. And, you know, you just made a comment that I know a lot of people go, well, he isn't telling me exactly what to do. And he wasn't really telling you exactly what to do either. He didn't tell you what street to go to. He didn't,
right.
You know, it was like, how did he communicate to you how to move from, you know, where you were with your church ministry, with your, you know, kind of in your safe, comfortable, it's not always comfortable, but in your safe environment, the one you're familiar with, all the way over to a street ministry that is very different from what we experience in our, you know, routine church ministries. How did you understand to follow Jesus there? What was your actual pathway?
For me, whenever what happens is whenever God's kind of, you know, as long as we're moving and taking steps every day to follow him and to live out his word, he can maneuver us where he needs us to go to serve his people. And for me, what starts happening is, you know, when I'm studying, you know, or talking to people or, you know, just different random things in my life, a certain theme will keep coming up over and over. And at that
right.
particular time, that was about 3 years ago, at that particular time, what was happening was the scriptures where, you know, Jesus was going, you know, and feeding the people, you know, and the scriptures about, you know, go to the prisons and serve the homeless, all those, I mean, they were coming to life when I was reading them. And my heart just started telling me, you need to start paying attention because I think he's trying to tell me something here.
There's a theme
I'm
here.
I'm always one of those that says, just give me the 2x4, please, because I don't
yeah.
understand.
Right.
You know, I
know.
I don't understand what you're doing in my heart.
Yep.
And so I just started, you know, just really started paying attention. And one of the reasons, and I write this in the book, is that, I mean, God speaks to me loud and clear through my tears. Whenever my heart is so moved and just tears come, mm-hmm. that's the way I know. It's crazy, I know, but that's just the way I know, like, this is a moment. You need to pay attention. And so going to the impoverished area, going to the inner city, kept coming up, my heart was being broken along the way. And it wasn't an easy journey because at that time, I was in a great church. You know, I'm still at the same church. We're just at a different location, which is on the inner city. But I, as a mom, all my kids were in their late teens, and they were all serving. They were leading worship. And one of the things I just kept telling God was, please don't move me. You know, this is a great season of life right here. You know, as a mom, I just want to kind of enjoy it. You know, just let me stay comfortable and teach my Bible classes here and watch my kids serve and praise you and just enjoy this moment. And he just kept nudging at my heart and nudging at my heart and nudging at my heart, to clear to the point to where I knew if I didn't actually step out of my comfort zone, it would be disobedience. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds like a really short journey when I say it here in just a couple of minutes, but it wasn't. It was a grueling in the fact of my heart, what was happening in my heart, journey over probably about 6 to 8 months of me questioning, like, seriously, God, I don't know why you're moving in my life this way, because I don't think I have anything to offer on the inner city. I won't relate with anybody over there. It's a different culture, you know. I'm, you know, a white girl from the city. I mean, it's just all these different crazy excuses I kept laying out there for him. And, of course, he was removing them, you know, as fast as I was laying them up on the table, like, do you know this? And, of course, he does. And so you got to listen to your heart, because God just, his spirit's within us. He's trying to move us to where he needs us. And I think this is what happened in my life. I think for so long I was just caught up in the routine. You know, I was busy. It was great busy. Don't get me wrong. It was busy. I was teaching, I was speaking. I was very involved in ministry. And that was my cry, you know, when I knew he was moving in my heart at that point, was, how can I fit one more thing on my plate? Especially when it doesn't even fit into this world that I'm living in right now. It's a whole other world that I don't know anything about. And it was a struggle working through all that. But I wouldn't trade it for anything, because I came to know Jesus in such a more personal way as I questioned, as I cried out, as I, you know, said, you know, a gazillion times to him, are you serious? So it was quite a journey, but you just have to follow those nudgings when you know through confirmation, through the word and what he's doing in your life, that he's leading you somewhere, because there's such a blessing waiting on the other side.
I love your story because it is so real. You're just real. And, I, you know, the Bible stories that I read, like about Moses, I mean, he's just real too. You know, God comes to him in a burning bush. No ambiguity. We're talking about the miracle burning bush here. And he's still going, really? Are you sure? I just think you got the wrong guy. You know, and it's, I love that that's at the very beginning of the Bible, because God's just telling us in as clearly as he can, when you are being called by me and this seems too big for you, number one, I don't doubt that you're going to have a few concerns about that. I'm hearing you. I understand that you're going to have some trouble getting your mind around this, that I, God, am asking you, little person, to do this thing.
Right.
You know? And then, you know, the second thing is that, you know, he's very persuasive. He's very insistent when he has something for us. It's not going to go away, just like the verses kept bubbling up in the Bible for you. And then you would go back and you're like, no, I don't want to do this. And but he, when he has something for us to do and the timing is now, then he can be very persistent. And the final part then is that, like in the case of Jonah or Moses, sometimes if we wait too long, if we just keep fighting for too long, there's actually a negative consequence that comes to us as a result. But if we can just embrace the fact that, okay, I wonder if God's speaking to me. I wonder if this is going to happen. I wonder about it. And I've changed my vocabulary, Alina, in the past maybe 10 years to include the word curious. I'm always just so curious what God is going to do. And in fact, it was based on a quote that I memorized by Oswald Chambers. No more sigh of sadness, only breathless expectation at what God is going to do next. And incorporating this word curious into my vocabulary, where used to be fearful, agitated, stress, concern, worry, all these things. And you just have to step back and say, you know what, God's got the journey as well as the destination. Mm-hmm. And I just have to plow it through with him. And I love what you said right at the beginning of that, one step at a time. Because a lot of times, you know, just like that lamp and it's talking about in Psalms, that's how much we get, the amount of light for one or two steps. A lamp just doesn't shine out very far.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just right there for the next step. So I love that you were persistent and that you kept on, you know, just battling it through. That's just part of the journey. Does it, at this point, looking back, does it feel normal to have had gone through that?
No, I still look back. Like, even my husband and I still laugh. I mean, and it's not a funny thing. We laugh at the fact of, oh, my goodness, look what God can do when you just submit, when you just surrender.
Right.
Because I've probably, in my Christian walk, you know, walking the walk, I've probably never been more content, had more peace. You know, all those things that we crave to have in our life, I've probably never had more of that, and I'm serving in a much more broken world. I mean, to me, it just makes no sense. And we chuckle for the fact that, because if you would have told me 10 years ago, and that was really 10 to 15 years ago, that was really before my furious walk started, if you know what I mean. Like when I really got diligent, I mean, I call myself a Christian, you know, I did believe, but I wasn't really serious about living that walk out. But being serious about living that walk out, I mean, I would have said, there's no way. There's no way. You know, it just didn't make sense. I think like a lot of us, but especially in my life, I can tell you 10 to 15 years ago, I was so caught up in the things I mentioned in the beginning, the title, the what, you know, how can I be better? How can I be bigger? You know, how can I have more? You know, all those things that, you know, were brought up from society or whoever kind of pouring into us, that's what life is all about. And so if you would have told me this, you know, 15 years ago, you know, I really would have laughed. Like, there's no way. That doesn't even fit into my agenda at all. But I love how God just came in and wrecked my heart to realize what matters more than anything is that you follow him, that whatever that step is that you obey. You know, and some people read the book and they're like, well, I can't hit the streets. And I'm like, you know what? God's probably not asking you to do that. He might just be asking you to walk across and love on your neighbor across the street. He might just be asking you right now to pour into your children, just, you know, love on them lavishly for whatever's going on in your home or your husband. And so for all of us, this moment right now in time, you know, God's nudging us to do something. He didn't come and create us with purpose just to sit back and watch us flounder around. So we have to be intent on, you know, going to his word and seeking what that is. And for each of us, it's going to be different. But I do know when he does nudge and he does speak, it's almost always out of our comfort zone. Always out of our comfort zone.
And too big for us to do without
and so
him.
No matter how little nudging is, it could be pouring into our husband or pouring into whoever. We're going to have those arguments, those questions, those doubts that I had because I was going 7 miles from home over to the inner city. And so it's just learning how, I love what you said, curious. Oh, my goodness. That sums it up. Just be curious enough to go to see, man, God, is this where you're calling me? And that's basically what happened. I finally was like, okay, God, I have no idea. This makes no sense. But, the nudging is so strong in my heart. I'm just going to go. And, man, when I got there, I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt, hands down, the first time I went, that was exactly where he was calling me. And so I think he just wants us to move.
Right.
You know, as long as we're moving, he can direct us where he wants us, whether we get it right or not. He's going to, like you said, he's going to move us where he needs us. And so, but we just have to be movable.
Yeah. And I just think, too, you know, just that one step at a time, he makes it doable for us. He doesn't say, you know, part the waters the first time he talks to us. He makes it doable. You know, just take your shoes off. How about?
Yeah, yeah. So, give me a little toe in the water or something.
Okay, we're going to come right back and talk a little bit more with our guest today about individuality, gateway to success. Our guest today is Aline Snodgrass, and that is the name of her website, too, www.AlineSnodgrass.com. We'll be right back.
The fastest and easiest way to find out which major women's events are coming to your area is to visit www.womensevents.info. That's womensevents.info. It's the only directory of its kind, and it features all of the major events like Women of Faith, Beth Moore, eConference Women, and so many others. It's free to search, and you can find it all at womensevents.info. Do you carry a few extra pounds around than you'd like? Are you sick to death of dieting, or maybe sick of resisting the urge to diet because every time you try, you gain back more than you lost? Check out eatingwithgod.com. That's eatingwithgod.com. It's the easiest, most obvious, and most powerful non-dieting approach to weight management that you'll ever find. Starting today, you can enjoy every bite eating with God. Learn more at eatingwithgod.com.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back. We're talking today about being an individual, being who God created us to be, being all that God created us to be, even when that kind of is like, oh, no, I didn't want to be that. So our guest today is Aline Snodgrass. She's the author of a new book called Graffiti, Scribbles from Both Sides of the Street, about her journey working with homeless people and also her friend Rick's journey, who is a homeless man. And I love the idea of partnering together to write this book, Aline, and I just encourage people to read it. I want us to talk next about avoiding the trap of making church and ministry into mini-gods. You know, I don't know how many people who are involved in a church ministry say this, but a lot of times we read a book or hear a sermon or hear someone talk about how they were, and then they got out of it, and they looked back and said, wow, I was really trapped in that. And I don't know if you have maybe some tips for us to help us to identify, am I in that trap? Has my ministry become my mini-God, replacing God in some part of my heart?
Boy, that's a great one, Marnie. And that is, for me, that is something I battle every day, keeping myself in check so that it doesn't. Because it's so easy in this world, and I think it gets busier every day. I think the world gets busier. I think it gets noisier every day. And all that busy and noise, my personality thrives off of. I know a lot of personalities don't, but I do. I love people. I love the busy. I love doing. And so when our life, especially when it's even our ministry within the church, or you know what the ministry God's given us to serve as people, when we get so busy doing, even if it's what he's called us to do, but we don't take time to stop and know God and to have that relationship with him and to spend more time making him still the most important thing and carving out, you know, the first fruits of our time and everything for him, then I do think our ministries and what he's called us to do can become our gods. And yes, we can be doing good things, and even good things can be happening, but our heart won't just be right. And I just continually every day just, you know, try to rein myself back in. You know, I try to keep a schedule for me because my personality needs that of, you know, my study time, you know, making sure I've got, you know, some quiet time, you know, carved out of my schedule so I can spend that with God. And for me to keep everything in focus, it literally does mean like penciling it in my planner. And just as a reminder, you know, okay, I need to remember to keep everything in perspective, because when you look at it as a whole, there's so many things that are crying for our attention, and they're all great things. I mean, not even just focus on ministry. You know, we have our our spouses if we're married. We have our family, you know, children, and, you know, all the activities that come with them. And all those are really great things. And our ministries, because that's, you know, our sphere of influence. But, boy, just for me, guarding that time to where I can sneak away with God, because I don't want to miss another moment like I had 3 years ago, you know, where I had to wrestle it out with God. Like, I really sense you, you know, nudging me here and calling me here. But those moments when you have that personal time, that relationship time with God, there's nothing that can replace that. I mean, and do you miss those moments if you don't carve out the quiet and make him the number one focus and make him the God and make him what your life is all about, even though we do have a million things to do?
Yeah, yeah. A couple things are bubbling to my thoughts when you were talking. One of them is that it says in the Bible that he talks to us through a whisper, through a quiet whisper. And when it's too noisy, and you are so right that unless we really make a conscious effort to reduce the volume, we can't hear a whisper because there's just too much noise in our lives, whether it's always having a radio or TV on, mm-hmm. or always having another project so you never have a breather between them. Even some people, when they go to the bathroom, when they just use the restroom, there's a magazine there that they pick up and look at. So there's not even any solitude there. They're in your vehicle, you have noise going at all times. There's all these places that are just naturally available to have a moment of silence or a few moments of silence with God that we don't take advantage of because we're in the habit of having noise around us constantly. And it's even maybe a little uncomfortable to have it be quiet if you're used to always having noise. But since God does whisper to us, it's so important to actually literally quiet the mind at some point. And when you were talking about ministry, one of the things that I do with goals as well as with things that I currently have. So right now I am married. How wonderful is that? I've been married to the same guy for 29 years, and that is just such a gift. But, you know, that has to be held in an open hand. I don't get to choose whether or not he'll be alive tomorrow, whether he will still love me a year from now. Those are choices that he makes and God makes. And so to hold everything we have with an open hand allows us to both appreciate it. First of all, you can see it. When your hand's open and not grasping,
right.
You're able to see what you really have, which is a gift, not something that I've deserved, but something that I've been gifted. And to have it in that open hand and to actually look at it there and just to, wow, be so grateful for it, that is what I do with the ministry parts of my life, too. The things where I have a title, or like you said, you know, you have these areas where they can become things that, who am I without that? You know, who am I without that? And I think about these things sometimes, and I say, and my children actually started it. I don't think I maybe would have gotten there by myself, but my children would say to me, Mom, what are you going to do after you don't have us anymore
mm-hmm.
at home? And I always would say, well, God's always kept me busy, guys. I mean, he always gives me something wonderful to do, so I'm not too worried about it. And then I had a ministry called Amel, which I had a girls' club in my home for 10 years, and I remember Mark saying to me one day, are you ever going to quit that? What are you going to do after that's done? I'm like, well, I'll quit on the day God tells me to quit, and then he'll have something different for me to do because that's how God is. And so just to hold these things with an open hand and remember that we're more – God is always so much more concerned about who we are than what we're doing.
Right.
And I always liken it to the dad and the little four-year-old going out on a Saturday morning. He's like, why come help me build a shed? You know, and the little four-year-old, yeah, you bet, and straps on the plastic tool belt and, you know, is out there making more trouble than he's worth for sure. And then at the end of the day, dad says, come here. And they stand back, hands on hips, and dad says, look what we did. And the little guy's like, yeah, we're good, aren't we? And then dad's like, let's go to the DQ and celebrate. You know, and the little guy didn't really help at all.
Right.
He just was in relationship with dad. And that's how I feel like we are, Aline. I feel like we're really not much help at all. But God gives us little projects to do, and then he rewards us when we finish them. But I think it's so important for us to keep that in perspective instead of saying, I am the project. No, I am the child of God who was given a little project. Oh, big difference in how we hold it.
Yeah,
how
love
we
that.
Worship it. Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah.
And those projects can change. You know, I think God
they
moves
do.
Us. He knows where we've grown and what we're ready for and how he can use it, but he also knows the seasons of our life just in the natural ebb and flow, you know, of
right.
growing up and newly being married and newly having a family and, you know, through the course of life, you know, he knows the seasons that are naturally happen in our life. And, you know, that's kind of like where I'm at right now. Some of the comments I get from the young moms is like, I'd love to go with you, but, you know, I was like, now's not your season. Your season is supporting those little kids. You know, that is your ministry. You know, if God would have told me this when my kids were little, I'm not really sure what I would have done. But he wouldn't have. The thing is, he wouldn't have told me because I wasn't ready. You know, that he knew I was not ready. That was not a season that Eileen was prepared for, that, you know, he had prepared me for that moment. And so,
well, and honestly,
talking about being prepared. Pardon?
Yeah, honestly, too, before you tell us that thought, he also had work for you to do before you got here. Not only weren't you prepared to do
right.
this, but he actually had projects that were valuable for you to do on the way to this one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it's so important for us to just really embrace whatever God has us doing today. I remember changing diapers on my babies and looking up saying, this is for you. Jesus, this is for you.
Right.
Everything we do is for Jesus. It doesn't have to be a big, you know, something somebody else values.
Right.
If I'm doing it because I'm supposed to do it today, Jesus values it. What more could we want than that? Yeah.
And it doesn't even have to be things people see.
Right.
You know, like we always tell the girls, you know, if sending encouragement cards, if that is your heart, God's calling you to do that. You know, if it's praying diligently and that is like your gift in your ministry, then do it. For some reason, we associate this. Well, God's calling me, so it ought to be out in this grand thing where it's visible. And that's not true. I mean, that's not even how our body works. And, you know, he likens all of us to a body. You know, there's inward parts, there's outward parts, there's, you know, there's all kinds of parts. It takes every single piece of that body working together to further his kingdom. And that's what it's all about.
You know, I have an illustration of why that's so important, that we don't do it really for the applause of other people, that we only do it for Jesus. When my Nana, my grandmother, was in a care center for several years, at one point I knew for sure that I was supposed to write her some letters, and I was supposed to tell her in the letters my faith journey and what God was doing amazing today, but also some of the miracles that he'd done in my past. And so I began to write these letters. And then there came a day that I was supposed to stop. And so I wrote these letters faithfully for a long time. And then it was like, oh, wow, I'm not writing to Nana anymore. That's so weird. I was writing to Nana all the time. Now I'm not writing to Nana anymore. Mm-hmm. And I'd write a letter, but I wouldn't send it. And there just came a point when it was just over. That season was over. And a couple of years later, I'd sent her some things in between. But a couple of years later when I sent her a letter, my mother happened to be there, and she got this letter, and my mom said to her, and she's in good mind, good sound mind, and my mom said to her, oh, look at that, do you still get all those letters from Marnie? And she looked at my mom, and she said, I never got letters from Marnie. Marla was the one that sent me all those letters. And so even the person to whom I was sending the letters did not, was not a, you know, and maybe at the time she had known it was me, but she'd lost that. And how hurt I would have felt if I had, it was over 500 pages of letters that I had sent to my Nana in the end. And how hurt I would have felt if I had done that for her and she had forgotten. But in fact, it was just fine because I knew I was doing it for Jesus all along and he had blessed her along the way. So we just have to remember to keep our eyes on Jesus. Don't look at what it looks like the goal is. Yeah, of course we have to look at that, but look at Jesus every time. He's always way bigger. We're going to take a short break and come right back and talk about dealing with some messy parts of ministry. And I know you've got some good old tidbits for us on that. We'll be right back with Aline about that.
Do you ever need speakers for dinners, retreats, conferences, or other women's events? Check out www.womenspeakers.com. It's the largest online directory of Christian women speakers in the world, featuring over 1,500 Christian women speakers, some near you, and some from every level of experience and fee range you can imagine. So you're sure to find lots of great speaker options for you and your next event over at www.womenspeakers.com. That's womenspeakers.com.
Well, welcome back. This is Marnie, and we're visiting today with Aline Snodgrass. Her website is her name, alinesnodgrass.com, and we're talking about individuality, gateway to success. She's written a book called Graffiti, Scribbles from Both Sides of the Street, which she and her homeless friend Rick wrote together. And she's here today to talk about how to move from where we are to where we feel like God's taking us, even if it's in a direction that maybe is a little perplexing to us. Aline, I want you to address right now dealing with the messy parts of ministry for a gal who, a city gal who's lived maybe never on that page before, to be submerged into that part of the book. At this stage in life, what was one of the most shocking things that you experienced right away?
Boy, Marnie, there were so many shocking things, and it's still to this day, but in the beginning, it literally was culture shock. But one of the things I just wanted to say before I talk about that real quick is that for the longest time in my life, I thought my life was so messy that God couldn't use me. We had gone through a really hard time years and years ago, where we were, my husband and I were scammed by a scam artist, and he took us for everything we were worth. We had no food, we had no money, because the FBI and the IRS were after him. We became involved in that. It took us 9 years.
Wow.
To clear our name in the court system. And during that whole process, you know, I knew God was carrying us, and I knew God was nudging me on for him to serve his people. But I kind of kicked and screamed the whole time, saying, you know, God, you don't understand. My life is so messy right now, I could absolutely be no use to anybody. But the whole time, God just kept nudging me through that whole process. You know, 9 years later, you know, we were out of the courts, and that's really when I started speaking to women and writing Bible studies. The first, you know, I think that was, might have been about the first time, you know, years ago, 7 years ago, whenever, when I met you.
Mm-hmm.
And through that whole process, what God really kind of showed me was that he could use the messy parts of my life even.
Right. Right.
And I think there's so many of us, myself included, I did it for years, and there's still days when I want to do it right now. You know, I just want to curl up and go, I don't have my life together enough. You know, if everybody knew this, and I don't know my Bible good enough, and I, you know, all those excuses, you know, like you just said, Moses had a string of them. I don't talk well enough. I don't this. I don't that. And, you know, God didn't call the cleaned up people. I mean, you can read over and over in Scripture, and he called the everyday, ordinary folks to be his hands and feet. And so what I learned through all that was that, you know, God can take our message, our mess, he can take our messy lives, and he can make that our message, but not until we surrender all of that to him. And so that's kind of what that whole 7, 8, 9, 10 year process of going through the scam artist and me, you know, continually working through that, you know, the forgiveness, the everything that was wrapped up into that. And then to get to the place 3 years ago, and, you know, one of the first things when I arrived at the inner city was and through that whole, let me say, going through that whole process, whenever not everyone knew about the FBI and the IRS and all the crazy that went along with the ordeal that we were in, there were days I would wake up and I just felt hopeless. I felt worthless. I felt like I didn't have anything to give. And so arriving over at the inner city a couple of years ago, my heart was just broken and in tears, meeting these people who won't even look you in the eye. They literally, now that I've gotten to know some of them, and they've shared with me more in depth, they just said, you know, I have felt so invisible my whole life that I don't even bother looking up anymore. And, you know, I feel totally unworthy. And so just watching them with their heads down, you know, and realizing that, I mean, it took 4 to 5 months of just smiling, hello, and loving on these people and just little bitty ways before they would actually look me in the eye and have a conversation. That just broke my heart. Yeah, it just so broke my heart. Just, you know, I just want to love them and say, no, you're worthy. We are all worthy. It doesn't matter if we're on the streets or if we're in a mansion. It doesn't matter. You know, God created us all, and that's kind of what the book is about, is that those differences that we think are differences, and they hold us up. They hold us up from loving on other people, because if we dropped all the differences, the way we look, where we live, all those different things, our hearts are the same. We're created by the same maker. And, you know, if we all know Jesus, we have that in common. And so that just really, that was probably one of the first things that broke my heart. And just seeing these people come, and they feel trapped. They feel like there is no hope. So to be able to bring them a little bit of encouragement and hope was just, you know, it still blesses me to this day to be able to do that. But had I not gone through the mess of my life where I had no food, where we had nothing, I don't think I could relate. I'm not sure if my heart could break along with them, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first class I taught to the women over there. As a matter of fact, we went through Dirty Laundry Secrets. Mm-hmm. And just to hear their heart, you know, they want hope, they want encouragement, and they're in that environment, in that culture, there's nowhere to get that. You know, they haven't had it for generations, a lot of them. You know, they grew up with their grandparents either, you know, in abusive or alcoholic relationships. They got the same thing from their parents, and so they don't know any different, and they don't even know any different of how to raise their kids different, because that's all they've seen through their whole life. But I think as I witnessed that, as I poured into these women, God just kind of revealed to me, you see, there's a purpose in the mess. You go through it, you go through your own life's messy battles, and you keep your eyes fixed on Jesus, and he will take that mess and he will make it into something grand where you can relate to more people. And that was huge for me, because it finally made that whole ordeal make sense. Not that God created it and it needed to make sense, but I could use it. I could use it for a positive thing in my life.
Okay. Right. One of the things that happened when I first started reading your book, Graffiti, was instant conviction about thought processes that we just have and we don't even know are there. Thought processes about homeless people, about people who are down and out, and you know, we could be that person. Just if we are not that person, you know, there's this saying there, but for the grace of God go I. And yet right away, there's these judgmental thoughts that came to me, even though they were just tame, they were still there. And I felt very much conviction about that. And also then, when you were first sharing this idea with me and some of the things you wanted to talk about during this show, the other one that really surfaced for me was the impatience that we have in the Christian church for, you know, we want to pray a prayer, and then we want it to be done. You know, we don't we don't want to have to wait around and, you know, do a bunch of prayers about it. You know, we get impatient with this. And those two convictions were really strong for me, impatience and pride. Did you have to deal with any of your own when you went? I mean, was there something that was like, oh, wow, I didn't even know that was in me?
Definitely impatience. And not waiting for God to show up, because it was, I think when you get so far out of your element, out of your comfort zone, and you go into wherever that scary place is for you, and you're relying only but God, because you know that you have no business being there without Him, if you're so far unrelatable or whatever it is, you see Him in ways that you don't normally see in your normal everyday routine. And so I immediately, saw Him doing great things. I mean, just great things in people's lives. The impatient thing for me was, it still is, I'm still working through this, because so many, like I said, to make changes, they're huge changes for them. And a lot of them don't even know how to change because they've never seen a non-alcoholic, non-abusive relationship or family.
And they've never had hope that that could be the one for them.
That's all they know. That's their way of life.
Right.
And so when you go in and they start seeing that, yes, things can be different. I remember one young girl that I worked with a lot, and she was in an extremely abusive relationship and felt trapped. And she had three little kids. And, if she left, how was she going to care for the little ones? And she called me in the middle of the night, just her and her kids just screaming, crying because they were being abused again. So we got her out of that, we filed the charges that needed to be filed, got her out of that situation, then for only me to realize that she went back. And that, and now that I've been there for years, you see that over and over because they don't know any different.
Right.
And it's just like any of the others of us breaking a bad habit.
Right. Exactly.
Some of us, we break it for 5 days and then we go back and we do it. And, it's the same thing over there, but the impatience in me was just like, no, can't you see it can be better? You don't have to live this way,
right.
And realizing that those are results that I've got to leave to God. All God asked me to do was go and plant seeds and love on people and, be His light in that area. Everything else, I've just got to learn to let my impatience go and go, okay, God, it's their heart is in Your hands because You love them more than I do.
I feel like this surfaces the subject, too, about just needing Jesus in our own lives so desperately so that He can flow through us. Because when we're still real hard on ourselves about our imperfections, and maybe we're hard on ourselves because we've had a habit we've been trying to break for a long time, and so we beat ourselves up a lot about that. What happens then is that in that area, the love of Jesus is actually blocked inside of us. It can't flow through to other people around us because we're still abusing ourselves. And so therefore, when we see someone who's abusing themselves in a way that our emotions connect with, right away, that impatience or, that lack of compassion, we aren't feeling what Jesus is feeling toward them. We're feeling what we're feeling toward ourselves in that moment.
Right.
And that really blocks the healing work of the Spirit. And any place where we can get healing in our own lives, that place is now an open channel for God's love to flow through. And I know, Aline, before you could go, there was some work that had to be done in you. And, of course, there still is in all of us, you too, and all of us. We'll never arrive at that perfect place. And we shouldn't hold back from ministry because we've got imperfections, obviously.
Right.
But just to watch how when God heals us of some of these hurts that we've had in our lives, maybe some of this self-abuse that we do when we fail, it just frees us to be flowing vessels of the power and love of God. And that's really, I guess, flows into this next point that we want to talk about ministering from our uniqueness, and that includes our weaknesses. There is never a person in the Bible other than Jesus Christ who got to minister with no imperfections. Every last one of them, you read it, and some of them are glaring and horrible. And it's like, wow, how could God use that guy? He was just a loser like me, And the thing is that God does. He chooses to use us right where we are with our own level of brokenness where we are today.
And I think that's when He can use us the most, when we can be real about that. What is it you asked? What did I learn immediately when I went over there? One of the other things that I learned, this had to do with me. One of the other things that I learned whenever I was able to do the first class over there. And, I mean, I was scared to death the first night. I just thought, you know, they're not, I don't know what God's going to do. I don't know how they're going to relate to me. You know, obviously, I'm from, you know, I didn't grow up in this culture. I mean, that's very apparent. But whenever I had the class, the ladies were awesome. They were so hungry. I mean, I just love that. They wanted hope, encouragement. But as I was teaching and I taught, I said something about, I just referred to David in the Psalms. And one of the girls piped up and she said, "Miss, we don't know no David." And so we had a great conversation.
Who are you talking about?
Yeah. And then later on, something else came up like that, and she called me out again. It was great. I mean, it was great for the class, because what it did in me was, I thought, when I went home that night, I went home crying. I said, "God, I am so Christianized, and I can't even think of a good word right now. My whole world has been wrapped up in the church," which is great, and I'm not knocking that, because of that journey I had, words in me. But taken so much for granted, I guess I should say. You know, I came from a world where I could say David and Psalms, and everyone knew what I was talking about. And so I never even gave it a second thought of, there might be somebody sitting in here who doesn't know David. There might be somebody sitting in here who doesn't have a Bible. And so when I went over there and started teaching, they wrapped my world. I mean, immediately I knew it was going to be stripped down, Aline. It's time to get real, because they're going to, any facade, they would see right through it. And at the end of that class, the girl that told me she didn't know David, she came up afterwards, and her, I love her to death. I mean, don't get me, so I'm talking about her like she's bad. I love her to death. But she just came up to me, because it was the first time she'd met me. And she said, "I don't trust you."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I get that you don't trust me. I wouldn't want you to trust me. You've just met me. But if you'll just keep coming back, what you will realize is that you can trust me, because I'm not gonna speak anything into you that is not absolute truth." And so for a couple of weeks, I'd go back to this class, and I'd just get this stare from these girls. It wasn't good. It wasn't bad. It was just like this stare.
Oh,
I remember one night coming home and just crying like, "God, I don't get it. I just need to get past that look. Just reveal to me what that look is." And he just, and then scripture and everything that poured out that morning, he, you know, just basically kind of told me, "They don't trust you. You are going to have to earn their trust." And that was huge to me, because then I went back and I was like, okay, in my mind, I realized they don't trust me. I'm going to have to break this down. I'm going to have to be about as real as I can be. And the cute girl that came up to me that first night and said, "I don't trust you," 2 years later, she called me on the phone and she said, "Aline, I need you to do me a favor." And I said, "What's that?" She said, "You're the only person I can trust. I've got money in my pocket and I'm headed to the crack house. Will you take my money?" And, of course, you know, I said, "Yeah, I did." When I hung up the phone, I was like, "Thank you, God. Thank you."
Yeah, wow.
And I was the first person enough that she could finally see what trust is. I mean, they don't even know how to trust God, because they've never had one person in their life. And so God just kind of really, I mean, he did a just huge refining in me. Like, you know, it's not about just throwing around Bible study, you know, Bible stories, and picking up little nuggets from it. It's like, break it down, get real, like put them in that spot, because they can relate to my word. And I'm telling you this story because I had a lot of learning and growing to do in a much different way than I've ever done before, but I sure wouldn't trade that for anything today.
Right, right. Well, and it makes me, you know, everything you're saying, I'm just listening for every listener. No matter if you're being called to a, you know, inner city ministry or not, it doesn't matter where God's calling you. You're going to have some of these same, we all have these same exact types of epiphanies, types of, you know, roadblocks, types of things that come. You know, maybe the conviction here maybe was impatience, but maybe with your ministry, someone else, the conviction is about greed, or the conviction is about power. Or, you know, I mean, it's the same journey lived out in a billion ways, you know, where you just have all these lives, and God's using us so uniquely where we are. And the most important thing, and this is, we only have a few minutes left, and I want to just spend the last few minutes talking about how you move toward God's purposes, even when you don't understand them, because that's really the most important thing, is that you just keep on stepping out your life and letting God orchestrate it. Even if you can't get it, even if you don't understand, how do I get rid of the stairs? Or how do I break through this?
Right.
Or what do I even do next? You know, I don't even know what to do next. You know, it can be really scary.
Mm-hmm. It is. I think it's, you know, it goes back to that word curious that you know,
yeah.
said earlier. That's great. Because if you feel, in my life, when I feel the nudging, I always tell people, God, the bossy God, he is going to nudge you until you step out of your comfort zone and take that fearful step. And that's why I said earlier, it doesn't matter where he's calling you. Like, I can remember having the same questions, the same doubts, laying it all out there in the same way before God years ago when I was working with teenage girls, loved it, wouldn't have traded it for anything in the world. I mean, I was in my sweet spot, if you know what I mean. And God started nudging me, you know, you're going to teach women. People would call me to talk to their women. I mean, and I'm like, no, God, no, you understand. I don't do
yeah,
women.
Right.
They scare me to death. Just keep me with my little teenage girls. I'm good to go.
Yeah.
And all those questions, I don't know enough. They know more Bible than me. Almost the exact same questions that I gave to God again when he called me 7 miles
right.
from home over to the inner city. And so I think that's just a normal part of life because he calls us out of our comfort zone. And what I always try to do, even though I'm scared to death, is number one, have a couple accountability partners that can nudge me on, like just give me a swift kick, like, you know, you need to go, so just get it done and take that first step. And then I always was like, the what ifs would always get me. What if I don't go and I really miss where God needs
yeah.
me to go?
Right.
And so just having those two things before me, just accountability and the questions in my mind of what if I miss something really cool that he wants to reveal to me or meeting some neat people that he wants me to pour into, those always help me take that first scary step. And once you take that first scary step, I mean, he really does either move you a little bit closer to where you need to be or he reveals, this is where I need you.
Yeah, I love it that I can trust him with my back. So what I always compare this walk with God is with like a tightrope walker. You've got this tightrope and you're supposed to be walking across and you've got to do this perfect balance thing or you fall.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so scary because one mistake and you fall. But the beautiful thing is that there's a safety net under there. So if you fell, that's okay because it might be a little embarrassing, might take a little extra effort to get back along there again, but God knew all that, and he's just got us. We really, if our heart truly is to do what God wants us to do, he is completely aware of that. And if our heart isn't to do what he wants us to do, and we're really just saying he wants us to do it, and we're really being stubborn and running from what he wants us to do, well, just like in Jonah's situation, he's very aware of that. And is this not a problem for him? He's just not all worked up about it like we get. And so just to take the steps, and I love it that no matter how badly I mess up, he knew I was going to do it before I did it. And I love the name of God called Providence. He is my Providence. And he's gone ahead and prepared everything that I will need, even knowing full well that I wasn't going to do a perfect job here or there, that I was going to mess this up big time, or that I was going to, you know, be stubborn here. And I've watched him, maybe a favorite illustration is I haven't used an alarm clock for, it must be 15 years now, and there was just a time when God was asking me to do something that there wasn't time in my schedule to do. And so the only thing I could figure out to do was just throw away the clock, because if that's what he wanted, then he was going to have to figure out how to make 24 hours work for it. And he's always been faithful to that. But what he knows is that sometimes he'll nudge me in the morning. He'll say, time to get up, sweetie. And I'll be like, yeah, roll over, you know. But the thing is that he knows in advance how many times I'm going to do that. It's just so amazing to watch him perfectly plan it. Well, Alina, in 30 seconds here, maybe just give us a concluding thought.
You know, as we talked through this in the past hour, the thing that just keeps coming to me that it just boils down to one word, and that's just obeying where he's nudging you to go.
Right.
You know, for each of us, it's different, but, you know, he's going to keep prodding us. He's going to keep revealing. And it's not about, you know, maybe we should take our eyes off of the fact that I'm scared, I don't think I'm good enough, you know, what if I fail, those things, and put it on, you know, I need to just obey God. And he'll honor the obedience, because that's all he's looking for to begin with. He's just looking for obedience, no matter what it is.
Right. He was always going to have to pick up pieces no matter how perfectly we did it.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. Well, this hour has flown by. Aline, such a delight to have you here again.
Oh, thank you. I've loved every moment of it, Marnie.
Good. God bless you. And everybody, you got to go check out her new book, Graffiti. And the name of the website is alinesnodgrass.com. Alinesnodgrass.com. Thanks for being here, and we'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.